To whom then will you compare me, or who is my equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see who created these. He who brings out their host and numbers them, calling them all by name, because he is great in strength, mighty in power, not one is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by my God, excuse me? Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint and strengthens the powerless. Even youths will faint and be weary, and the young will fall exhausted. But those who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. This is the word of the Lord.
We're doing favorite verses this summer, and today's the last day of summer, maybe, depending on teacher strikes. But it's the last Sunday of this series, and we've been doing these favorite series, favorite sermons, and favorite scriptures. And today it's Isaiah 40, 31. Kim was actually my second choice. My first choice was Eric Little. If you've ever seen the movie Chariots of Fire, there's just a classic, amazing scene. Please tell me you've all seen Chariots of Fire. Okay, no? Oh my gosh. You need to go home and rent it. Thank you. There's this amazing scene where he's reading it, and you see people running, and he's reading this passage, and just a wonderful story about perseverance and dependence upon God. Secondly, I do have to start with a joke. Someone told me a joke between services. It was, what bird does not need a haircut? A bald eagle. Yeah, yeah. I've always been fascinated with bald eagles, so I grew up in San Francisco area, just south of San Francisco, and I don't think I ever saw a bald eagle anywhere in sort of that part of California. I didn't see bald eagles until we moved north of the border to Vancouver, British Columbia, where I attended seminary at Regent College. And often on our commute into campus, we would see eagles circling above the highway or above the road, and we'd just pull over and just watch them and gaze them. I just thought they were such amazing creatures. And so when we moved here to this Vancouver ago, I was really pleasantly surprised to find out that there actually are bald eagles in the Portland area and this part of the Northwest. I didn't know that. In fact, there's a bald eagle that sometimes hangs out above the north parking lot here at the church. And just seeing that eagle sometimes when I come to work is a real special blessing. I took a picture of a bald eagle for you. I don't know if you can see it. I'll zoom in a little. Anyone have an idea where it is? We'll go in a little closer. Now you can probably see it. Okay. The head is white. There you go. See that? Okay, this maybe helps. But to me, there's just something iconic about bald eagles. They represent this profound mix of kind of regal and strength and intelligence and just effortlessness. It never feels like a bald eagle's sweating or struggling or stressed. Even when they dive into the water, there's just a gracefulness about their movements, even at the high speed. And there's nothing weak, there's nothing faint about a bald eagle. And maybe that's part of what we like about them. We like their strength. And not many of us like being weak. And yet this passage this morning is written to a people, an entire people, that were weak. Isaiah chapter 40 is sometimes referred to as the beginning of what's called Second Isaiah. There's a big time gap of maybe about 150 years between chapter 39 and 40. They don't tell you that, but it's true. And so chapter 40, it takes place around the mid-6th century before Christ. And at that time, the city of Jerusalem had been conquered by the Babylonian Empire that had been expanding. And all of the kind of elite educated citizens of Jerusalem were shipped off to Babylon in order to basically serve at the whim of the government there in other parts of Mesopotamia. And so with that sort of tearing apart of the fabric of their society, there was just the possibility of the good old days of King David and Solomon were a distant memory of the past. And so these people of Israel are destitute and weakened of all strength. And yet Isaiah wants them to know that God is still God and they are still his people. And if those two things are true, then there is a future for them. There is a future with a hope. And so he says these words to them. He says, "He gives power to the faint and strengthens the powerless. Even youths will faint and be weary, and even the young will fall exhausted. But those who wait for the Lord will renew their strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." Please pray with me. Shepherd Lord, silence in us all voices but your own, so that hearing your word, we would respond with faith and hope and obedience. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen. So Isaiah says, those who wait for the Lord will renew their strength. We're not really good waiters in our culture. We live among a people who are bad waiters as well. Perhaps you've found yourself in this kind of situation. Everyone has their phone out. You might as well, too. This has taken place in Thailand. It could easily take place probably anywhere in Clark County or Portland. And the problem is with our idea of waiting. When we think about waiting, we think of that as wasted time. So we have to fill the time. We associate waiting with passivity. It's dead space, and it needs to be filled with something, anything. So sometime you should just try this experiment with yourself if you can kind of get up the will to do it. Get in line for something. Maybe, you know, wait for a bus, wait for a train, wait for your groceries, and just choose not to look at your cell phone during that time. And instead, just take in your surroundings and maybe pray. Maybe reflect. Maybe name three things that you could be grateful for. Maybe notice the people around you. Look them in the eyes. Smile at them. That'll freak them out. Help someone with something. Maybe there's someone who has a need near you that you haven't noticed. These are radical ideas, I know. Or just forget that. Go into auto mode, pull out your phone, and fill the space. Or if you're in the car alone, turn on the radio and fill the silence. Or if you have a day with some freedom in it, schedule more things and fill the calendar. Isaiah, his message is, don't fill the space of waiting. Rather, engage with it. God's people were just filling the space, filling it with other things, things that were not drawing them to the Lord. So Isaiah tells them to wait. In our house, we have one good waiter. She will wait for a long time if you have what she wants. It makes you feel a little guilty as you're trying to eat or do something, just being stared at. But there are some interesting things about the word for waiting, and I'll leave her up there just partly because she's cute, although not as cute as puppies, but she's still pretty cute. The word wait, three things. First, it's the same word as hope. So she's hoping that she'll get something. So she waits. We wait in hope. We have hopeful waiting. They go together. Second thing is waiting and hope are not nouns. They're verbs. We think of them as kind of passive activities. Hope is just, you know, fantasy. Waiting is passivity. But they are verbs. They are something that we do. They're not beliefs. They are actions. And finally, this word for wait or hope, the root of it is actually the word for rope. So if you think of the image of rope and the strands twisted and stretched into tension and then they're tied to a solid object, that has that image of what we wait for and hope in. It's the thing that we cling to. That's like our lifeline. Those that wait for the Lord will renew their strength. So Isaiah says, wait, wait, wait for the Lord. So how do we wait? And how do we do that well? First, so this word for the Lord. The Lord, every time you see the Lord capitalized, I've said this before, but it's worth repeating just so that we keep this in mind. The word Lord, when it's capitalized, it's actually the word Yahweh, which the Jews would never say because it was God's holy name. It was the name that God gave Moses at the burning bush when God said, I am committed to you. I'm going to deliver you. I'm going to save your people. You will be my people. I will be your God. And that's the deal. It's God's name of commitment. It's his shepherd, covenant, love, commitment name. And so when you see the word Lord, it's not really saying, I mean, he is the ruler and he is the Almighty One, but it's not emphasizing that as much as he's the one who's committed to his people. And so this word Lord is the one who is a personal Lord. Wait for this Lord. He's irreducibly personal. And because he's personal, he can't be bottled up or boxed in. Like Jesus, he can't be reduced to a formula. He is who he is. He will be who he will be. And that's where our problem with waiting kind of comes in. We wait and we hope and we act and we cling to a lifeline, but the things that we cling to and we hope for and we wait for usually are not the Lord. Now, we may believe in God, we may go to church, we may have a great collection of religious books on our shelves, but in our daily lives, moment by moment, here's the question. Do we operate by what some have started to call a kind of functional atheism? Parker Palmer defines functional atheism this way. He says, it's this belief that ultimate responsibility for everything really, in the end, rests with us. It is the unconscious, unexamined conviction that if anything decent is going to happen here, that we are the ones that must make it happen. It leads us to impose our will on others, stressing our relationships, sometimes to the point of breaking them. It often eventuates in burnout, depression, and despair, as we learn that the world will not bend to our will, and we become embittered by that fact. This is the idea that God is not so much the Lord in relation to us, but he's maybe more like a busboy or a maid. His job is to be kind of like another self-help book on our shelf. Religion then is used as a way to get kind of a morale boost while at the same time making us feel respectable. It appears like Christianity on the outside, but functionally, in our day-to-day lives, in our moment-by-moment existence, we're atheists. And this is a very real question and a very real challenge. It seeps into our lives almost imperceptibly. One of my summer reads was this book, Present Perfect, by Gregory Boyd. I'll throw it up there. And he also talks about functional atheism, and he describes it as this subtle default mode that we settle into. He says, we've been strongly influenced by a secular worldview that inclines us to live as though God was not present and as though he did not want to lead us in any given moment. We may intellectually believe God is present and wants to lead us, but it's hard for us to actually experience this or live like this. Most Western Christians aren't even aware that God is always speaking to us and trying to lead us. We tend to live as functional atheists who are lords over our own life, despite our profession of faith that Jesus alone is the Lord of life. In his book, Boyd offers just kind of a whole bunch of practical suggestions of how we can change our mindset to be more open to the presence of God and the leading of his Spirit in our lives. One suggestion, he says, is to just simply ask the Lord throughout the day, what would you have me do? Just be open. And instead of thinking in our mindset, which is kind of our default, what should I do, to begin asking, what should we do? It kind of reminds me of, in Romans 8, the Message version, I love this, the way it says in Romans 8:15. It says, the resurrection life that you receive from God is not a timid, grave-tending life. It's adventurously expectant, greeting God with a childlike, what's next, Papa? What's next, Papa? What do we do now? What are we going to do in this situation? What do we do while we're waiting now? How should we spend this time? Instead of thinking I, me, to begin thinking we. And that we then gets extended to the community that we're around. And he says, and Boyd suggests that when we have an inner impression, as long as it's consistent with love, then try acting on it. The point is, the Shepherd Lord is here, is present, and are we willing to listen to him in the now? And then now. Now, the thing is, for some of us, we've actually never known anything different than thinking I all the time. And because of that, rather than waiting and hoping for the Lord, we tend to work and strive for deliverance. And Isaiah is speaking to these people who long for a better life, they want a better future, they're hoping for change, they need deliverance. But Isaiah's promise of eagle's wings are not for those that hope for deliverance, it's for those that hope for the Lord. And this is an important point. Functional atheism, if we were to kind of think about where the confusion is, it confuses deliverance with the Lord. It wants the thing and not the person. It gets caught up in religious activity and ignores prayerfulness. It's all about benefits and blessings and not really about obedience and walking in faithfulness. In its approach to God, it just wants answers from God rather than a relationship with God. It's what Jesus talks about in Matthew 6 when he challenges those that would be his disciples with kind of a priorities test. He says, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you as well. But seek first the kingdom and his righteousness. In other words, seek a relationship with God first, and then deliverance will come. Well, how does it come? What does it look like? How do we wait for the Lord and renew our strength? How do we mount up with wings like eagles and run and not grow weary and walk and not faint? Where does this strength come from? There's an interesting word in this passage, actually. Let's see. There we go. So those who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. We kind of run by it, but the word renew is actually often translated change or exchange. It's not renew like I'm going to take an energy chew or a power bar and get renewed or have a power nap. It's about a change out, an exchange. I had this experience on Friday. I was playing golf. I don't get to play golf very often, but I got to go out with a few guys. Jeff was there, and we were playing at Camas Meadows, and the idea was to play a scramble. If you ever played golf, a scramble was two of us, and we would hit, me and my partner, Scott, would hit the ball, and whichever ball was better, we would use that one, and then hit the ball again, and whichever was better, we'd use that one, and all the way to the end. And it's great, because you like get par most of the time if you're playing with someone decent, which I thankfully was. And several times I would hit my drive, and it would go out of bounds. And then Scott would get up and hit his drive, and it'd be perfect straight down the middle, and be like, great. Exchange. That's a little bit. I'm sure that's what Isaiah had in mind when he said, those who wait for the Lord shall exchange their strength. And what's really interesting, it's fascinating, when you look at the logic of Isaiah 40, the logic runs like this. First of all, no one and nothing compares to the Lord of God. He is the best. He is strong and powerful. We are not strong and powerful. The Lord does not grow faint, not faint or grow weary, but we do faint and grow weary. Even our best, even our, it says our young men, it kind of means our strongest, the elites, even they grow faint and grow weary. But the Lord gives power to the faint and strength to the powerless. In other words, the Lord, if you're kind of following the logic, the Lord is the one who shares his strength. But he shares it not by giving us a thing called strength or power. He shares it by giving his very self. The message is God is what they need. God is what I need. God is who you need. The Lord himself is the answer. The shepherd, creator, Lord, the eternal Father, Son, and Spirit. He is the answer. Now, of course, when we're dealing with functional atheism, then we resist this because what we really wanted was deliverance, some blessings and benefits. We wanted answers. What we really want is kind of an energy boost, a divine energy drink that'll get us through the day. We want to be strong in ourselves. We want more inner resources. We want more self-sufficiency. But the Lord is not offering that. He's not offering more independence. He's actually offering less. We were hoping that this would enable us to feed ourselves. But he insists on being the one who feeds us. We were hoping that the grace of God would fix us up so that we could be on our way, but God instead wants to put us on a nonstop IV drip of grace. And that's the central paradox of the Christian life in the very heart of the gospel. It confronts this functional religious atheism head on. And it's this, that growth in the Christian life is not about becoming more and more self-sufficient or more spiritually competent. You know, we look up at some people and they're super spiritually competent. They're the wonderful leader. We exalt these people. But the gospel is that growth and progress is really about Christ, his power being made perfect in weakness. At least that's the way Jesus talked about it. In John 15, he said, "Abide in me as I abide in you. Branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine. You cannot unless you abide in me." And the Apostle Paul knew that in his own life. He said, "This treasure we have is in jars of clay. They're going to break. They're easily cracked. But this all-surpassing power is from God. It's not from us." And then the message he heard from the Lord as he listened was, God's grace, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. The New Testament evidence tells us that following Jesus is not something that necessarily gets any easier. The goal is not to move from being weak to being strong, or from being dependent people to being self-sufficient people. It will always remain a struggle and a challenge because obedience is never automatic. It's really about being more and more dependent upon God, because the helper himself is the help. The Lord is to be our strength. We are as utterly dependent on God's grace at the end of our lives as we were at the beginning of our lives. It's a little bit like manna. Holiness is not something that we can store up. It's something that we need to depend upon day by day. Karl Barth had a great way of saying it. This is a quote attributed to him. "There are no such things as experts in the Christian faith. There are only ever beginners. The rhythm of the Christian life is to begin again at the beginning." So if your goal is to become a stronger Christian, to soar high, to run fast, to walk effortlessly, then you've got the wrong goal. Your goal ought to become a person who tries as much as possible to be open to the work of the Spirit so that you can engage in simple obedience moment by moment by moment. Jesus said, when we seek him first, then all these other things will be added. There will be moments of deep delight and joy and fullness when we feel like we are soaring. There will be times when we have listened to God and we're doing what he's asking us to do, and we find ourselves being able to run hard and long and not burn out because we're not doing things that he didn't ask us to do. And there will be times when we are able to walk and walk and just keep walking no matter how hard and painful life has become, because he is our strength in those times. And maybe today, what you need most is just strength to keep on keeping on. Maybe you came into this place, and when it says, oh yes, walk and not faint, that's me. I just need to be able to keep walking. And the good news is that he is here, not to give you an energy bar and send you on your way. He is here to feed you with himself.